Hey, Cam, mind sending me over our new Wi-Fi password?
Oh, sorry, Mitch, you can't be trusted.
What?
It's your phone. It's different than mine.
Cam! And I thought I was a judgy one.
No, it's just messages between different devices aren't encrypted.
Okay. Since when do you know about encryption?
I know what encryption is, and it's because I'm the last line of defense against any would-be Wi-Fi thieves.
Cam, come on.
Okay, fine. I'll send it somewhere more private.
Thank you.
Safely send messages between different devices. On WhatsApp. Message privately with everyone.
Everybody, Jake and Gino here, and today we're talking about how to have confidence in your due diligence. Now, this is a very interesting question because not all sellers are created equal, to say the least. Not all size deals are created equal when it comes to due diligence. Not all organizations are, you know, at the same level of proficiency and professionalism. So this is a wild topic, you know, and I think you have a couple stories. We can even talk about our first deal, but share some of your experiences with unprofessional due diligence that was lacking in your confidence, to say the least, when purchasing real estate.
Jake, to me, this is a very touchy subject because this was the bane of my existence when I first started investing in real estate. I didn't know what proper due diligence was. I was winging it. What I want you to do is if you want our checklist for Jake and Gino, there's over 28 items that we use during due diligence. Now, that seems like a lot, everybody. But once you've got the checklist, the framework, boom, probably not enough. You send it over to your attorney and say, this is what I want. I wish I had that in the beginning. The words that I live by now, famous Ronald Reagan, I think said them, trust but verify. You want to go into the transaction,
so appropriate,
trusting the other side. But you need to verify everything. But what do you need to verify? When I first started out, I didn't know what to verify. I just saw the property. I saw some numbers. Let's go. But there are so many things that you need to get. I mean, when we first started our courtyard deal, I remember that. We got chicken scratch. This is what we're collecting in rents. And a lot of mom and pops have that.
Literally.
I mean, that's one thing. Second thing, what about any records? I see you have septic tanks.
Hold on. When he says chicken scratch, it was literally handwritten notebooks of the rent and what came in pencil. So you could very easily edit it and erase it out. It was lacking in just about everything that you want. But, you know, so it was funny. My uncle at the time, I was like, you know, I asked him, I was like, what do we do about this? You know, I said, I don't know if these people are really paying this. So early on, we went door to door knocking, verifying the rent. And it was a unplanned visit. We said, hey, we're going to come in. We're going to ask every resident what they're paying in rent because we wanted to know, because the leases were on index cards and a little plastic tote thing. And it had like the person's name and phone number on it and supposedly the rent. These people were not evil. They were not trying to hide something. They were they were just so far removed from technology, organizational skills, systems. I mean, whatever the hell you want to call it, they were just, you know, saying, hey, you got cash, here are the keys, don't call me, death spiral it up, see you on the other side. That was it.
Jake, there's two points that I'd like to make about that. First thing, I'll give you another example on that property. There were septic tanks. Well, when's the last time you pumped the septic tank? I don't know. We don't remember. No records of anything. Do you have any kind of contracts with the garbage company or whatever? Once you take the property over, you assume ownership. You're assuming a lot of things. Those leases become yours. And they weren't evil. They were really nice people. But the problem is,
so sweet.
They're incompetent. And don't think all people are trying to hide things from you. There's pros and cons.
Yeah, because that's me. I'm like, what are they hiding? Yeah. What are you hiding? And that's why I'm going door to door knocking, right?
But. You know, the thing is, there's pros and cons to everything in life. And the pro to that is, boy, if you can make it through this transaction, you've got a motivated seller. You're buying a problem, not just a property. The con is, boy, you've got to get some real numbers over to the banker. You have to make sure that whatever you're verifying is true. Are they paying $650? And if they're not, and they're only paying $500, well, does the price come down? So look at it as sort of a blessing in disguise. And I'm reading David Goggins' book, Can't Hurt You. It's all about mindset. Once you've done one or two of these, it's like, I've seen another one of those. You got to get your mindset into the game and say, what is my ultimate goal? My ultimate goal is to buy this problem and turn it into an opportunity. And due diligence is where you see those little golden nuggets starting to appear.
Yeah, no, 100%. And again, It's just you getting into it and don't be shy. Lean into these problems because they're going to be your prosperity on the other side. Those problems are the opportunities that are going to lead to the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. So, you know, we can't cover all 28 of these, but let's cover, you know, a few, cover our top three. Okay, GS Dana, we're going to cover our top three items to trust but verify. And my favorite here, and, you know, I think this is probably Gino's as well, is, hey, we want that cash money, son. Show us that cash income. I don't want your pro forma. I don't want your accrual. I don't want your chicken scratch on the index card. I want to know what is real. Show me a cash rent roll. Okay. Show me the rent roll on cash basis. Okay. And then I want to see some bank statements as well. I know they're not going to line up. I understand there's a difference and it's not always going to be perfect, but I want to still see that that cash is going in every month. Okay. So it's one thing to say it, but I think everyone out there feels the pain that new market, new listing coming to market, beautiful, you know, 200 units. Look at this. And then all of a sudden you get into it and it's, they're showing you an income statement and that's not actually the income. That's showing market, what the market rent is. Out of 200, we got three at market though. This thing's chugging along, baby. But that's not the actual income that the property is doing. We're not buying on actuals at that point. So then you run your numbers and you're like, oh shit, this works. Yeah, it works if you get the income to that point. So whether it's a mom and pop showing you index cards or whether it's a slick glossy, you know, from Madison Avenue, it doesn't matter. You need to trust but verify the actual cash money of these deals.
And Jake, you need the cash income, whatever's coming in, because for the most part, a lot of these mom and pops don't have expenses. So if you have income and you know your market really well, and you're buying a 25 unit like Jake and I did originally, we know what a 25 unit property cost to operate. So if you've got the income, you can figure out some type of expenses, then you can get your net operating number, and then you can figure out a way to offer that price. You need that cash income. Big difference between accrual and cash-based accounting. Most mom and pops don't do accrual accounting anyway. That's for the bigger deals. So the mom and pops, they're going to tell you, hey, I've got 10 units. Each one's rented at $600. I got $6,000 in rent, but you have $6,000. But how many are not paying? How many are late? What is actually going in the bank? Because when you buy the property, you're assuming those problems. So know those problems in the beginning.
And know a lot, and we're kind of talking, going back and forth between bigger firms and smaller firms. These bigger firms have income statements for when they're selling, income statements for when they're reviewing things internally, income statements that they're showing to the bank. I mean, it's like, what the bleep of the numbers, gang? Let's settle in on something real here. So just be aware of what's going on out there. And, you know, this dovetails, Gino was talking about expenses beautifully into T12s. Okay. We want an income statement showing income and expenses for a few reasons. Gino touched on doing your own budget. I completely agree. We always do our own budget. We're looking at what the current income is. We're basing that against our budgeted expenses. But look, every property is run a little bit differently. So I want you to get into that T12, look at those expenses, see what's being done, because all of a sudden you might see, oh, water is, it's two times higher than what we're used to. Or there's going to be some of these, you know, these costs that are reoccurring that are specific to this property that you need to use to build your budget. But there also may be some things in there that you don't use or you're not going to be, you know, applying. So it's very crucial to review theirs, add it to yours, see what's different, and then make sure that your team is aligned on what you're saying your budget is going to be. And don't fluff it. Don't pencil whip this. This is not the time to, you know, get cute with it, because ultimately there's going to be money at risk if you're being cutesy with it and you're pencil whipping a deal or saying, oh, well, their water bill is $20,000 a month, but I guarantee I can get that to 10. That's not recommended, okay? Because there may be something there that you're missing, or there may be, you know, some kind of usage thing going on that you're not aware of. And we've seen it. There was a deal. Oh shit, I don't remember if you remember that deal in Oak Ridge. You know, it was about 2 years ago.
I do.
And they're saying, oh, very clearly the value add opportunity is to reduce the water bill. And then so we started calling the local municipality. And their rates were simply like three times or whatever higher than what we're normally operating under. So no, you're not going to reduce that water bill. You're just helping to pay for the cops and the schools in that district. So, you know, be very aware of this stuff, because you can get your ass burned pretty quickly.
A T12 simply means a trailing 12 months. Now, if you can't get a trailing 12 months, try to get a trailing 3 months and then multiply it by 4 to annualize it. Most brokers, especially during COVID, they may give you a T1 because the last month is doing great. But if you go back to the prior 11 months.
Everyone loves the T1, baby. The T1 is always sunshine and rainbows.
But a trailing 12, it's a story. It tells you a saga of what's going on with the property. Why 8 months ago the rents were $10,000 and all of a sudden they're $13,000? Why do they go up so much? Are you just trying to fill the place and just put in warm bodies because you're trying to sell the property? Why all of a sudden, like Jake said, this month we've got a $4,000 jetting bill from the plumber? Are we having plumbing problems? Is cast iron failing? And the list goes on and on. It's a story. You can tell how they've reinvested in the property, right? If they've got, if you're looking at the income and you see a lot of late fees or a lot of eviction fees, that's another thing that's saying to yourself, I may have problems taking this property over because this property may not be in the best area because I've got some unordinary income that I really don't want. A little bit's okay, but the T12 will tell you the story of what's going on with the property. So please try to get it. Some mom and pops don't have it. Man, the brokers, this is where the brokers, you need to have a really good broker, because when a broker brings a property to market, they should have that up there. And what you want is based on the T12. You're always buying a property on a pro forma, not on the broker's pro forma, on your pro forma. And you're going to base it off the trailing 12 months and build your next 12 months off of that trailing 12 months. That makes sense, Jake?
Dude, Gino, you are so smart. It's like you're living and breathing this stuff. You know, everything that you say is just a dovetail segue to multifamily nirvana right here, because the third and final one that we're discussing today is leases. And Gino just talked about, look at where those people are working. He said, mention the leases. Who are they putting in? Are they just filling up the property with people to make it look good? So what you need to do is a lease audit when you're buying these properties. A lease audit is going to tell you, hey, I'm going in, I'm seeing, wow, they're letting this guy rent here, but he doesn't have a job, okay? And they did no criminal background check on him. Or they just put this person in here and the income statement or the rent roll they gave me shows that he's paying $1,000, but his lease is for $700. What's up with that? Can you fill me in here? Remember, this is trust but verify. Oh, look, the lease is one page and they don't have any rules in there. Whatever the case may be, like some of this stuff is a little far-fetched, but maybe not, right? Oh, cousin Larry in unit 121C has a 6-year lease at $300. You're assuming that, okay? So this lease audit is crucial, and you can't skim over it. You got to have also a place to take the data and plop it into. So you need to be making sure you're checking what the current and actual rate is, what the term of the lease is, what are the rules, okay? All this stuff is very crucial. And then so you build out that lease audit doc, and you can put it all into it. So you're verifying that the actual information is being placed in, and you can look for weird variances and things that don't align with your values.
Jake, we have a calculator, the deal analyzer calculator. I can leave a link.
It's got the lease audit in it.
It has a lease audit, and this is crucial. I want to share a story with everyone. On our third property, it was 136 units. I'm still working at the restaurant. I remember getting all the leases, and I was so overwhelmed because I put every single one of those leases into the lease audit. But guess what? I made sure nobody was paying rubs. That was a big value add for us. I wanted to make sure that people had pets. If you have a pet in an apartment, you better be paying pet rent. And if you're not, guess what? You're going to be paying it. Security deposits. Are we assuming security deposits? We want to make sure that Mary in apartment 1A has a $500 security deposit, and we're getting that security deposit at closing. You do 136 times $500. That's a significant amount of money. I remember spending hours and hours on my first lease audit. Then as soon as we started scaling and growing up, I had my son start doing them. Then we had certain team members start doing it, but you need to go through every single one of them. I remember on our very first syndication, apartment number 6, the lady was living there forever and she was taking care of the property. She wasn't paying rent. So when we took that property over, guess what? She had a couple months, but then obviously we're taking the property over and she had to go find a new place to live. On our 281 unit property, I remember taking that property over. There were like 6 units in that property that were paying half rent. They were giving free rent to cops, three different cops.
Cousin, you know, Willie and
it was, it, but it's an amazing thing. You need to be a detective. Remember, trust but verify. Go in there. And then you have to abide by those leases. That's one of the things. Maybe when you see an inordinate amount of free leases or something and you're going to be losing money, that may be a retradable offense. I'm not saying you do, you don't, but take a look at your risk. Take a look at how many down units you're going to be having and how many units below market. I remember taking over these properties that had 3 or 4 units that had rent for $300 for the next year. Well, we're losing an additional $400. times three, which is an additional $1,200 a month we're losing. So, you know, weigh the pros and cons and see what you need to do. But that lease audit is crucial when you're taking a property over.
It's a business. Treat it like one. Okay.
Yep.
Here's the problem. Mom and pops, maybe they own a 130 unit, they own a 50 unit, maybe they own 100 units. All of a sudden, it's like, hey, I own all this. I'm going to be the cool king of the hill. Hey, buddy, you want to do this? And you can rent here for free. You do this. You start giving away these weird concessions and you're wheeling and dealing. It's a business. Treat everybody the same. This is the rate. This is what you pay. Don't take that mentality into it. You're going to erode everything that you do if you start acting like that. So it's toxic behavior. Don't do that. So Gino at jakeandgino.com. Is that what we're talking about? It's Gino at jakeandgino.com. He has given away our top items for due diligence. The items that you need to trust, but verify. The G-Dad is a saint. He's given away the farm because he's a sweetie. Gino, you're a really good man. Thank you, sir. See you next time.
Mr. Stens, thanks. Take care, everybody.
See you, gang.
Dogs are an important part of our lives, and keeping them protected is a top priority, especially against nasty parasites. That's why you gotta check out NexGard Plus, ofoxaconazole, moxidectin, and pyrantel chewable tablets. NexGard Plus chews provide one-and-done monthly protection that kills fleas and ticks, prevents heartworm disease, plus it treats and controls roundworms and hookworms. That's a whole lot of protection packed into a delicious beef-flavored, soft chew designed to make monthly dosing easy and enjoyable. So the next time you're at the vet, ask about NexGard Plus Chews. They're the one-and-done monthly parasite protection you want for your dog. Use with caution in dogs with a history of seizures or neurologic disorders. Dogs should be tested for existing heartworm infection prior to starting a preventive.